This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs and contracts, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and jobs. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dortch.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today we're going to be talking about an incident that's been all over the news about a company that we've had on our show before, Stratfor. They're the geopolitical intelligence firm that does a lot of great work for government agencies, for companies, nonprofit, for-profit firms, and just for individuals in providing geopolitical analysis about what's going on in the world, threats and other things like that. We've got on the show Fred Burton, and he is a vice president of intelligence, and Roger Baker, right? Is it Roger?
Yes.
Roger, he's a vice president for strategic intelligence from Stratfor. We had them on the line. Stratfor recently had a situation where their servers were hacked, and they had to kind of go through a whole dynamic, and because of their clientele, it went all over the news. And Fred is going to talk about that kind of situation. Fred, I know your Christmas was interesting. Your Christmas and New Year's was interesting. What happened, and how did you guys end up getting a fix on this whole hacking incident? I think by the group Anonymous.
That's an interesting question in itself, which I'll get to, Derek. But in early December, we uncovered the actual cyber attack on Stratfor servers, where there had been an unauthorized data breach, and the hackers or hacker retrieved subscriber email addresses, internal email communications, allegedly, and credit card information of some former and current paid subscribers. And we've been working since December just about every day with wonderful assistance by the FBI that has a investigation underway to try to get to the bottom of it. The group known as Anonymous or a faction of them has claimed responsibility for this. However, the actual perpetrator of the offense is unknown to us. As we've chatted over the years, Derek, I have a great deal of faith and confidence in the FBI's ability to get to the bottom of this,
sure.
Simply because we're a long line of other victims that has been victimized in this kind of attack, to include many different U.S. government entities and DOD contractors and so forth.
That's right. And that, you know, we can speculate, but why do you think, Fred, that they kind of went after you guys? I mean, out of Stratfor. And I know that, you know, you have a lot of, contacts. Your firm has a lot of contacts with many in a lot of different, you know, avenues of the world, whether it be intelligence agencies, defense pieces, major corporations and everything else. Do you think that's why they set out to target you guys, because of the work you do?
We don't really know a motivation at this point. Anything that any assessments that I might have would be nothing more than speculation. Certainly, we're a very well-known publishing company that has a web-based service where our analysis, which we pride ourselves on of being balanced and unbiased, is something that many different news agencies greatly depend upon as a source material. So it's kind of interesting when you start thinking about all the different reasons or motivations, but literally, as of today, I couldn't tell you We have no smoking gun, so to speak, as to a specific motivation. We just have some forensics of the initial hack, where the organization known as Anonymous has claimed responsibility for this.
With that, you know, as you guys, and you spent the whole kind of basically holiday season, I mean, you didn't really get a break. You spent the whole holiday season kind of dealing with this whole dynamic, to, you know, even to the point where you guys just said, well, listen, we're going to just shut the whole website down until we get a handle on this. What kind of security methods did you, you know, is now implement to kind of say we're going to make sure that something like this, and of course, as make sure as much as possible, but make sure like something like this doesn't happen again?
From a business continuity perspective, in essence, four of our servers and backup data were pretty much destroyed, and we believe that whoever did this was certainly trying to silence us from writing our analysis for reasons unknown to us. But as a result of that, what we did was we made a purposeful decision to take everything offline and kind of build up a good and very solid, robust base. I'm not a IT expert when it comes to the cyber, but we certainly have brought on a very good cyber tech company to help us rebuild everything. We've partnered with an identity protection company called CSID to assist our current and former subscribers to provide free credit and identity monitoring for a good year. And then our internet security firm we brought on called SecTheory to rebuild our website and our internal infrastructure. We also reached out to Verizon Business and asked them to come in and do a forensic investigation on our servers in tandem with the FBI's criminal investigation. So it's been very, very hectic, as you can imagine. But we literally are back up. For your listeners, our website is open for anybody that wants to access that at www.stratfor.com. It's usually a paid service. We're going to be putting this behind a very robust firewall very shortly, but in the short term here, you can log in and read all of our analysis for free. And I think that once your listeners take a look at the kind of events that we're covering, they will certainly recognize that we're just trying to bring some analysis and trying to make sense of the world for our very loyal readers and followers for a number of years here.
Definitely. And I was a Stratfor subscriber, too. I mean, in terms of that, and you always provided timely, daily, weekly, very, very strategic analysis that I know many people have always kind of relied on and looked at. When you look at the subscriber base, are you getting a number of people who are being very supportive and kind of understanding? Of course, you know, this is a situation sometimes beyond control, but are you getting a lot of support from whether it be government agencies or corporations or whoever the case is, and say, listen, we're still behind Stratfor and what you do?
Overwhelmingly so, Derek. As you can imagine, when these kinds of events happen to any company, you are concerned about customer consumer reaction, and we've been overwhelmingly pleased with the volume of just support. There's been a fair amount of negative comments written about some of the things we've done on the net, which, you know, anybody can get on the net and post a message and so forth. But we've gotten countless phone calls, cards, and letters and emails from many different subscribers that range the gamut from some of our U.S. government consumers to your average person that just wants to stay informed. So I must say that the response has been very, very supportive and, to be blunt, humbling. So we're eager to get back up and running. We're marching forward now, and there's a lot of good forecast analysis that's out on our site right now. And Rogers Strategic Intelligence Group has put together some wonderful world forecasts, which I'm sure you guys will get into, that are in essence free for the taking, and we'd love for folks to take a look at them and comment about them.
And one last question on this, Fred. In terms of, you know, and me and you've had many discussions about the threats, whether it be terrorism or, you know, looking at things in Mexico, China, this, that, and the other. And is now, because of this situation, is cyber going to be one of the things that Strat 4 will be looking a lot more into as a threat that you will be covering in the future?
We certainly are looking at this and trying to get smart on the topic as best we can. We've consulted with you know, some of the best in the world on this behind our doors, and you know, it's an issue that we are collectively as a company, not only from an internal infrastructure perspective, but from an analytical perspective, going to try to get much smarter on going forward.
It's Fred Burton. He's a vice president of intelligence for Strat 4. They're a global intelligence analysis firm, well known and for definitely people in D.C., but around the world for their excellent analysis on a number of different issues that are going on, threats that are happening in all parts of the world. Strat4.com, which is STRATFOR.com, is where you can find their site. And for now, it's free for everybody to take it. And Fred, when do you think, you know, any kind of time where it will go back to subscription base, or time will tell?
Derek, I don't know when that's going to happen, but I think it's from a projected timeline, I believe it's going to be in about a week or two.
Okay.
Will the
prices still be basically the same as before?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes. In fact, we've taken advantage of our downtime here to kind of tweak things that we've always wanted to do, but never had the opportunity to do from a formatting perspective as well. So I think our readers are going to find a new and much more better from a navigation standpoint perspective website than they had in the past.
We got to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk more with Strat 4, but we're going to go beyond the hacking incident, go beyond the cyber issues, and start talking about what's going on around the world. They just recently put out their annual forecast for 2012, had a number of different issues in there that I think all of us should be paying attention to. We're talking to the people from Strat 4. Fred Burton, he's the vice president of intelligence, and also Roger Baker, he's the vice president for strategic intelligence from Strat4.com. We'll be right back after this break. You listen to Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around a mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to GEICO.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
My family struggled, and it was assumed that while I would go to college, I would have to pay for it myself.
Charlie wasn't sure how to get the money she needed for college. Then she found out about federal student aid and the FAFSA.
I don't think I quite realized what a huge deal actually graduating was. Federal student aid definitely made that happen.
Need help planning and paying for college? Find out more at college.gov.
My name is Charlie, and this is my story.
Hey, Caps fans, make sure you check out the Caps Academy and youth hockey websites at WashingtonCaps.com. These are awesome sites where players, parents, coaches, and fans of all ages can find everything there is to know about hockey, including the basic rules of the game, advanced coaching strategies, and information on youth hockey programs in the D.C. area. You'll also find plenty of instructional videos and tips featuring Caps coaches and players. For all this and more, check out the Caps Academy and youth hockey websites at WashingtonCaps.com.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible. Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
When you build the world's most complex ships for the U.S. Navy and U.S. Coast Guard, there's no question you know how to do the hard stuff right. At Huntington Ingalls Industries, it's what we do every day. We are a 125-year-old new company built upon the foundation of two legends, Newport News Shipbuilding and Ingalls Shipbuilding, with an unwavering focus on safety, quality, cost, and schedule. Huntington Ingalls Industries. Hard stuff done right. Visit HuntingtonIngalls.com today.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. Government financial managers are committed to produce timely, reliable, and useful financial information. Stay on top of issues that affect you at AGA's 10th Annual National Leadership Conference, February 16th and 18th at the Ronald Reagan Building and International Trade Center. AGA's NLC features the latest tools and innovations to help agencies do their jobs more easily and more effectively. Don't miss it. Register today at agacgfm.org/NLC.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we are talking about Strat4, the recent incident. Strat4 had a hacking incident, but they have gotten past that now, and they're back up and running with their site, and they're providing intelligence analysis as they have always been. And we're going to start talking about some of that analysis. We have on the line with us Fred Burton. He's a vice president for intelligence, and Roger Baker. He is a vice president for strategic intelligence. And I think Roger's group just put out their annual forecast of 2012. Roger, your annual forecast kind of reminds me of the I always read the report from the overall threat assessment from Defense Intelligence Agency that goes out to Congress, and it reminds me of a similar. Your report reminds me of that. Talk to us about this report and what were you covering in this annual forecast of 2012.
When we take a look at that each year, and we put these forecasts out on an annual basis, we run them on a decade basis, we run them even on a quarterly basis, and kind of try to keep track of what's been going on and what's coming up, what are the strategic issues going on in the world. We really try to distill down the core trends that are going to be taking place. So we're not necessarily trying to predict who's going to win an election here or little tiny details of things, but more what are the major drivers of the global system during this time. And so obviously the Middle East takes a high place in what's going on, the implications of the U.S. withdrawal from Iraq, the change in Iran's position, the question of U.S. force deployments in Afghanistan and how the U.S. adjusts those. We look at the European economic crisis and its implications around the world. There's a consolidation of Russia's sphere of influence and big question marks floating around China right now, which is undergoing a leadership transition and dealing with perhaps an economic crisis at a depth that they've never had to deal with in the past.
And, you know, before I go into it, because I really want to break this thing down, and because, you know, when I start reading the report, it was interesting to me, of course, as we kind of think of the news cycle, of course, people would have thought, well, Middle East would be first, but then you kind of kicked in with the Europe first and the implications of that. But before I break down the report and we talk about each area specifically, I want to kind of maybe educate people on Why is strategic intelligence, or why is understanding all of these world events important, especially to maybe a U.S. consumer or a U.S. business, and other whether it be a nonprofit or government agencies? Why is this stuff so important as it relates to what we do here and the decisions we make?
Well, I think one of the issues is that with the amount of news that's flowing around in the world, there's no shortage of information out there, but there's a shortage of the ability to put it within a common framework and to be able to step back from that massive flow of information and identify what really are the forces in action, what really are the directions in which we see certain trends going, and what are the ones that rise up to the level of importance versus the ones that are maybe important on a lower scale or on a more immediate scale, but just are the vagaries of the day-to-day activities. And so if you can identify this this broader direction, we build effectively net assessments of the world and of the different parts of the world, and use those as frames to say, this is the critical issues for this country. These are where then we can see where they overlap, where they clash with other places, and identify priorities for them. And that lets us be able to say, what are going to be either crisis areas or opportunity areas mm-hmm. during the world? And if you can see that ahead of time, you can better prepare for it, you can better learn about it, and you can make your decisions based on a deeper base of knowledge rather than just on the latest piece of information from today's headlines.
And for businesses who basically now everything is about the global economy and just kind of think about the private sector, I mean, this decision-making, what I sometimes call decision-making intelligence or actionable intelligence, it really helps, like you said, kind of guide some decisions that maybe a corporation may say, well, we're getting a product from such and such part of the world. We're getting a product from Russia. We're getting a product from Greece. We're getting a product from an area that Iran is talking about blockading. And this may have an impact on, how we do business. Was that correct?
Well, certainly. And if you look at business, much of business these days is really about supply chain. It's about the movement of goods from multiple sourcings. And there's very few products anymore that are built in one location. They're built in 30, 40, 50 locations.
Right.
Sometimes they're passing all over the place. And a disruption in one can have a ripple effect throughout the entire system. And so being able to perceive where these disruptions are likely to be gives you the chance to maybe prepare an alternative at that particular point, or look and readjust your supply chain to bypass those types of areas, or to prepare and say, you know what, if we expect, another crisis, say, surrounding the Strait of Hormuz, we know that oil price is going to change to X. We can be prepared ahead of time to either stock up on oil or change the timing of movements of goods or things of that sort.
Right. With that, let's get into the report. The first thing that, in terms of your one of the subheading areas that you start focusing in on is Europe. And, that was a curious thing, especially as we look at China and all the other kind of hot topics in the environment. Of course, we hear about Europe all the time, but talk to us, why was that the first focus, and what in the Europe is that you're looking at that are either areas of concern or opportunities?
Well, I think when we look at Europe, and the reason why we put Europe first is that if you think about things like China or the Middle East, those are actually at a moved along stage in the process of where they're at. But Europe is entering a moment where we're on the verge of a dynamic change in Europe. The experiment of the European Union appears to be nearing its end. And what has been taken for granted, which really has only been, the past, say, 20 years of stability in Europe, or relative stability, may be on its way out. And so as we look at Europe, yes, we're looking at the financial aspect, but more importantly, we're looking at the political and social implications of that, and the significance if the European nations are no longer bound in a single entity, but instead are back to being competitive with one another, not only from an economic standpoint, but perhaps from a security standpoint as well.
What does, you know, if that's the case, and like you said, this experiment is almost over, are we seeing good opportunities from that? But as you mentioned, kind of the security dynamic, if things become a lot more competitive in Europe, are we talking about a lot more tensions, or are we talking about a dynamic where there will be just kind of more working together, a lot more collaboration, and everything else? I mean, what direction are you kind of forecasting this may go?
Well, I think in the short term, over the next, you know, 6 months or year, we're going to see everybody in Europe trying to find a way to hold this together. If you think about European history, we have 20 years where European countries work together and 1,000 years where European countries do not work together.
Right,
they're
sure.
Constantly arguing with each other over every possible thing. Right now, at this moment in the crisis, the financial crisis, people are looking and saying, you know what, we've really got to find a way to not let this break back to the traditional European patterns. But in the end, we're getting to a point where the national self-interest of each of these states is rising above their willingness to assume themselves to another country, and in particular, that other country is Germany. And Germany is the dominant strong power in the European structure. And many of these countries are going to be willing to give up a little bit, but at a certain point, no longer willing to give into that. And it may not be a decision made by the top leadership. It may ultimately be a decision made by the populations and by the emergence of new political parties and new political movements that say, I'm Greek, I'm not German,
right,
or I'm not European.
Sure.
And you.
Everybody wants their own identity back.
Well, they do, and the European Union was a great experiment when everything was economically good. Everybody benefited. When you have an economic crisis, but you no longer have the ability to control your own currency, suddenly you see some massive restrictions on your national sovereignty.
Right, right. You know, it sounds as if the next, maybe the next few years, maybe next 10 years or so, are going to be very, very interesting as it relates to, and you mentioned Germany having the dominant power structure over in Europe. I mean, are we getting a sense, you know, and how would that impact the United States? Are we getting a sense that there will be some negative repercussions from this? I mean, I know they're going to try to hold it together, but as you start, you know, looking at this long term, and you're looking at political leaders and maybe the rhetoric that's coming out and kind of, you know, seeing what's happening, do we see that, you know, there will be some clashes that may have some very, very strategic and negative impacts?
Well, I think we would see a realignment of the security structures between the United States and Europe. So the NATO structure is already trying to figure out what its purpose is.
Right.
If there isn't, for example, a Soviet threat. Well, we see the Germans and their interests aligning much closer to the Russians. We see the countries between Germany and Russia.
That's almost taking us back to a Cold War.
The U.S. In some ways it is. Except that the countries right on the Russian periphery are pulling to the U.S.
Okay.
Germany is pulling towards Russia. The French don't know which way to go. And so you see this fracturing of, you know, the NATO structure that's been in place and that's had the U.S. and the Europeans in some sort of known cooperative agreement. It may turn into the U.S. working more with a bunch of subgroups within Europe than with a broader Europe as a whole.
Wow. Wow. We got to take a quick break. I want to keep on talking about this as we go forward. We're talking to the people from Stratfor. We're talking to Roger Baker, I should say. I'm changing your name, Roger. Roger Baker, he's a vice president for strategic intelligence at Stratfor. And we also have on the line with us Fred Burton. He's in the background just in case. He's a vice president for intelligence at Stratfor. They do global intelligence analysis that government agencies use, that corporations use, that the individual subscriber can use, individual businesses can use to make decisions. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
As the government works to address the growing wave of cyber crime, one provider is leading the fight. Verizon stands as the first and only identity provider to achieve ICAM Level 3 approval. This enables Verizon to issue strong digital identity credentials that meet strict, predefined standards to government agencies, health organizations, and businesses. It's one way Verizon is leading the fight against identity theft and fraud. To find out more, visit verizonbusiness.com/identity.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
Join host Michael Keegan for a special edition of the Business of Government Hour. Leaders Speak, a conversation on leadership and public service. What makes an effective leader? Why pursue a career in public service? Over a dozen past and current government executives shared their extended reflection on the next Business of Government Hour.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
Since Pakistan shut down U.S. supply lines in late 2011 because of the NATO killing of 24 Pakistani troops, the Pentagon has been spending more than six times what it normally does to get supplies to troops in Afghanistan. According to information obtained by the Associated Press, it cost $104 million a month, $87 million more than when supplies came through Pakistan. I'm J.J. Green.
911, what's your emergency?
Every day, EADS North America supports homeland security and defense missions here at home and around the globe. Whether it's responding to emergencies or disasters, providing military helicopters, or systems that patrol and secure our borders and coastlines, EADS North America delivers on our promises every day. EADS North America, commitment defines us.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday at 10 a.m. here on Federal News Radio. This week, my special guest is Caroline Adams Miller, an amazing coach and a best-selling author of Creating Your Best Life, The Ultimate Life List Guide. Tune in to listen to Caroline. The show is brought to you by Odin Feldman & Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Vienna, Virginia. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
A new tool allows you to give opinions about video content, say a politician's debate performance, without doing survey forms. All you need to do is watch. Give permission and your computer's camera records your face as you watch the screen. New software called Afdex then instantly analyzes even the slightest changes in your facial expressions.
The software finds different points on your face that correspond to your eyebrows and your mouth and your cheeks and so forth and tracks them as they move.
Rosalind Picard of MIT's Media Lab says when watching a video, those facial expressions
convey the experience of the person viewing it.
And she says it can be confidential.
We're not pulling out identity information. In many cases, all we're doing is we're counting smiles.
To find out more about this and other engineering innovation stories, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. That's www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Have Federal News Radio headlines delivered directly to your inbox. Sign up for the Federal News Flash at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we are talking to the great people at Stratfor. We're talking to Fred Burton. He's a vice president of intelligence. He's on the line. And we also have Roger Baker. He's a vice president for strategic intelligence. Stratfor is a global intelligence and analysis firm that does a lot of work for government agencies, for corporations, and also individual subscribers, researchers, academic researchers, and everyone else can also take a look at their services. They look at the whole world and provide a lot of geopolitical analysis that is very, very helpful. We are talking about the annual forecast 2012, and we just talked about a Europe and the changing dynamics that you don't really hear. You hear about it in the news, but you don't get a lot of coverage in the news about what's going on in Europe. I want to kind of keep on going. Roger, the next one on your list is a former Soviet Union. I mean, of course, we sometimes hear about them when it comes to oil issues. There's been possible some shakeups in leadership and some new people running and people trying to put Putin out of power. What are you seeing in the former Soviet Union?
What we're seeing is a country, Russia, that has spent the last couple of years trying to reestablish its influence, its dominance in the countries of the former Soviet Union, particularly in Central Asia, in the Caucasus to some extent. And now it's moving to, in some ways, institutionalize that strength. It's creating systems to lock these countries back into a very tight and formalized relationship with Russia, not to rebuild the Soviet Union as such, because that would require the Russians then to take responsibility for all of the internal problems of these countries, but rather to pull them more firmly into the Russian orbit and give the Russians stronger control over that. We see Vladimir Putin still holding fairly strong within the country. Some of what we're seeing on the streets is engineered or manipulated drama more than it is, a Arab Spring for the Russians.
Sure. We just talked about the Europe and the changing dynamics of a Europe. Do you see that Russia sees opportunity in kind of this split up and possible even a fractioning, and we don't know if it's happened or not, but maybe a fractioning of NATO? Does, Russia has always kind of really kind of contested that, but then they've been trying to work together with NATO a little bit. Does Russia see opportunity to now regain its power base?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of issues for the Russians. On the one hand, they were really counting on Europe in some ways having a bit of economic recovery so that they could draw more European investment into some of the Russian business sectors. That's probably not going to happen now. On the other hand, this gives them a great opportunity to really pick certain countries in Europe, use their leverage with energy supplies or with access to Russian investment and things of that sort, and tighten those relations and thus undermine the strength of the European connection as a whole, particularly the connection with the United States. And so the Russians can use this to further chip away at an already crumbling NATO structure.
With the United States, I mean, I know you have an area about here about Russia and the West. And we spent a lot of money and resources, especially kind of, ballistic missiles, missile defense, when it came to Russia, that whole kind of Cold War standpoint. Where are we headed with this? As, Russia and the U.S. have kind of been working together on a lot of different things. Where is the relationship going to go as it relates to the U.S.?
Well, this is where it gets really difficult in the end for the U.S. and Russian relationship. The U.S. is already losing a little bit of its perceived influence or its willingness to come rushing into Europe to help Europe against what's seen as a stronger Russia at a time of European weakness. And this is particularly in the states that are the peripheral states along the edge of the Russian periphery. So the U.S. has to play up and continue to play with this missile defense issue because it demonstrates to these countries a U.S. commitment to be there, a U.S. commitment to stand by them and not abandon them. But that, of course, is going to put the U.S. at continued contention with the Russians.
You know, with that, I mean, and there's so many different threats, because as we look at it, Europe and kind of the fractioning of different areas, Russia and maybe them kind of looking at more influence. Are we seeing more military spending with Russia? I mean, are we starting to see that they're trying? I mean, I know we've seen it with China and some other areas. But are we starting to see a little bit more of the kind of a diplomacy, but also a military push of their sphere of influence again?
Well, we are. We're seeing the Russians start to place their missile systems symbolically in places closer to Europe and even in places over in the Pacific theater. We're seeing the Russians relook at their military structure, at the effectiveness or ineffectiveness of, for example, the conscription system, at trying to find ways to have a higher quality military, even if it's not a larger numerically military. And so I think that's where the Russians are putting their attention. They've always always been, even in what were perceived as downturns, they've always been working on technology and improving technology. They're shifting their focus also now to training so that people are able to utilize the technology. And then the Russians traditionally have their method of selling arms abroad, which helps to fund their own technology cycle, but also adds the influence and involvement of Russian service around the world.
And we're starting to, even with the recent, not necessarily so recent, but the case where the FBI have found the 10 Russian spies in America, we're kind of starting to hear about that happening a little bit more, espionage happening, within the United States and other places from Russia, where that was very much a threat, some years back. But are we starting to kind of be concerned about that, where China had taken that whole intelligence espionage threat and they have become kind of number one? Are we starting to become a little bit more concerned about Russia again?
Well, I'll say a little bit, and I'll yield to Fred on that one. But, the threat never wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
It just becomes something that I think people are starting to pay more attention to once again.
Fred, what do you think?
Well, there's no doubt that the Russian SVR predominantly has increased over the past two or three years their espionage efforts. And you would be hard-pressed to try to place the Russian espionage efforts on a scale with the Chinese when it comes to that. One thing that China has that Russia doesn't in this vein is they have many more different operations and front companies and so forth that they can utilize from a manpower perspective than the Russians do. But both are extraordinarily aggressive when it comes to spying on U.S. technology and basically trying to steal U.S. technology.
So that should be something especially for U.S. high-tech firms, whether it be Silicon Valley or defense industry, that should be something that they should really be taking a serious look at if they haven't taken a look at before.
No doubt. And most corporate security directors that we talk to are certainly aware of that. And again, the FBI does a pretty good job of outreach program along those veins to help companies with that threat. Where the vulnerability really exists, Derek, is in some of the more emerging technology areas where you get small startups or those small to medium-sized companies that are developing the next kind of technology or widget that the DOD or the CIA wants to utilize. And if the Chinese or the Russians can steal that first or get that kind of mirror technology going, that's really the kind of vulnerability as you look at that sector.
We got to take a quick break. We're going to come back and do one more round. There's so much to cover. We're not going to get a chance to do it all because we only got another 10 more minutes left in the show. But we're going to come back and try to cover as much as possible about what else is going on in the world. We're talking to the people from Stratfor, Fred Burton. He is the vice president of intelligence at Stratfor, and Roger Baker. He is a vice president for strategic intelligence at Stratfor. You can find their site at stratfor.com, which is STRATFOR.com. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit, presented by NITP, has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 AM Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Agencies must move 3 IT systems to the cloud by mid-2012. Email and workplace collaboration applications are among the most popular early choices, with a number of agencies already successfully moving to web-based email. Which agencies are leading the way? What can other federal employees learn from their experience? Tune in to Federal News Radio Tuesday, January 31st at noon to hear answers to these questions and learn how agencies are taking advantage of the cloud. January 31st, noon, on Federal News Radio, sponsored by Google.
Relive the buzzer beaters, dunks, and times shared with friends and family in buff and blue at the homecoming game versus St. Joseph's on Saturday, February 18th. Join Colonials legends including 2012 Hall of Fame inductees Chris Monroe and Shantae Rogers and alumni from across the country at the Charles E. Smith Center to reconnect with GW Athletics and enjoy Atlantic 10 basketball. Tickets are still on sale. So visit GWSports.com or call 202-994-7325 today.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife. My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
Meeting mission goals through IT modernization, brought to you by General Dynamics IT.
Congress has added a roadblock to the Army's move to a government-operated cloud for enterprise email service. Language in this year's defense authorization bill requires the Army to put its move to the cloud on hold while it prepares various reports and business case analyses for the service operated by the Defense Information Systems Agency, and then reports back to lawmakers. The Army estimates it'll set back its transition to enterprise email by at least 45 days.
General Dynamics IT delivers the full strength of enterprise IT to drive innovation like infrastructure consolidation and modernization, cross-domain information sharing, cloud computing, Web 2.0, and a constant flow of new applications and IT services. General Dynamics IT helps government, military, and commercial organizations achieve new levels of productivity and mission effectiveness. General Dynamics IT brings together the expertise, technology, and best practices to deliver secure enterprise IT solutions. Go to gdit.com to learn more. That's gdit.com.
I have this dream where I'm leading a group of people in developing groundbreaking solutions for environmental and energy issues. Every day, I'm helping to build this company from a startup into a major player. Before long, we're expanding into new markets, opening offices, getting media coverage. What am I saying? This is no dream. It's what I'm doing now, thanks to my MBA from Capital College.
The business world is driven by strong leaders. One of the best ways to raise your leadership skills to the highest level is through an MBA degree from Capital College. Our online program is focused on developing high-level leadership and management skills for both private and public sectors, with a thorough understanding of how to apply new technologies to solve real-world business problems.
My dream turned out even better in reality. Capital College. It isn't for everyone, but it's perfect for me.
For a virtual info session on graduate programs at Capital College, visit capital-college.edu/radio. That's capital with an O, -college.edu/radio.
Government financial managers are committed to produce timely, reliable, and useful financial information. Stay on top of issues that affect you at AGA's 10th Annual National Leadership Conference, February 16th and 18th at the Ronald Reagan Building and International Trade Center. AGA's NLC features the latest tools and innovations to help agencies do their jobs more easily and more effectively. Don't miss it. Register today at agacgfm.org/NLC.
Headed to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor, Federal News Radio can be heard crystal clear on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. It's the same great station, just on an added frequency. Get the latest news about the federal government and government contractors. Hear exclusive interviews with the movers and shakers in the federal arena. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. George on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we're talking about Strat 4. We're talking about some the geopolitical issues that are going on around the world. And we're talking to the great folks from Strat 4. We have Fred Burton on the line. He had to step off. And we have Roger Baker. He is a vice president for strategic intelligence. He's on the line with us right now. Roger, we've covered Europe, we've covered Russia, a couple of other areas, Central Asia. A lot of times people don't necessarily hear about that. The stands, I should say. What's going on in Central Asia that we should be concerned about?
Well, Central Asia is really at an interesting turning point. We still have a couple of those kind of old leaders who have been there forever, who are nearly on the verge of death and have been nearly on the verge of death for a few years now. And they haven't built in a very clear and effective path of succession. And there's a lot of competition over that. These are countries that have, you know, small populations, a relatively high amount of wealth rolling in from particularly energy exploitation, but also from a few other things. And they sit right in the middle of in many ways, a competition between the Russians, the Chinese, who are really exploiting the energy, and to some extent, the United States, who is trying to keep them from you know, becoming a firm hold for the Russians, and also trying to keep them, some cooperation with them so that they can be able to work with the Afghanistan issue from Central Asia.
And, you know, people don't necessarily always, you know, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, you know, Kyrgyzstan, Kazakhstan. These are areas that in terms of strategic importance, what is it? Is it resources? Is it because of where they sit in, you know, in these countries? What is it? You know, a lot of people don't understand the strategic importance of these countries, but what is it?
I mean, a couple of things. Number one is location, location, location.
Okay.
I mean, it's where they sit. They sit right in between Russia and China, right at the edge of basically of the Middle East. They really are a crossroads. They're for centuries, they've been crossroads. This is the path that Europe used to trade with the Chinese. Their energy. There's a lot of natural gas, a lot of oil resources. There's questions of which direction does it go? Does it go over to China? Does it go up through Russia? Does it go across the Caspian? Can it get over into Europe? Then there's the final little piece that I think hasn't been seen for a while, but we see starting to stir back up, and that this area has traditionally been an area of Islamist militancy.
Hmm.
And so the old IMU, the Islamic Movement of Uzbekistan, militants that have been connected into Islamist militancy, into China, all the way over into Pakistan, Afghanistan, these are starting to stir back up again. And so you've got that question mark. These ones, they connect both locally and transnationally.
With that being the case, let's move into the Middle East and Iran. And I know you kind of have a section talking about the Iran and Saudi dilemma. Talk to us about that. What are you talking about when you talk about that?
Well, when the U.S. pulled out of Iraq,
mm-hmm.
What it did in many ways is it broke the old balance of power in the region. When Iraq was there as a counterweight to Iran, there was a Sunni-Shia balance. There was effectively an Arab-Persian balance. It allowed the United States to be not too concerned about the region, obviously worried about oil and things of that sort. But there was not an ability for a single power to become the dominant power within the Middle East, and therefore have strong and dominant influence over energy supplies and things of that sort. By pulling out of Iraq, in many ways, the Iranians now have an expanded element of power. They have a fairly strong network of influence into Iraq, and if you remember, Iraq was primarily a Shia nation run by Sunni, so the Shia are very happy to retake power, and they'll work not necessarily 100% with the Iranians, but certainly work with them. We see the Iranians and their connections into Syria, and that's a big question mark where that goes. And the Iranians are working in Afghanistan. So if you have we have the potential now for the Iranians to have strength all the way from Iran, all the way up through Iraq, Syria, right on through Lebanon, right into the Mediterranean, and that leaves the Saudis feeling extremely weak and extremely vulnerable to this emerging Persian Shia power.
And so we're looking at areas like the Saudis, Bahrain. We're looking at UAE and other people who maybe the United States have some spheres of influence with. But would you say that all of them are starting to feel some concern?
Well, I think they are, and we've seen small-scale uprisings, political protests and things from minority communities or from Shia communities in there. So things that had largely been stabilized either through force or through money are breaking down. This is providing opportunities for the Iranians to try to exploit internal ethnic weaknesses. And if you go back to the creation of this region, when the British left, they built all these false borders. Which in some sense created a system that would never allow anything to be strong. But now that there's the U.S. kind of backing out a little bit, all of these pressures are starting to pop back up and these tensions are starting to re-explode.
So much to talk about, and we've run out of time. The annual forecast for 2012 from Stratfor covers everything from Iraq, Turkey, other areas of East Asia, all the way going down into Africa, South Asia, Brazil, Venezuela, Cuba, and other places like that. You need to take a look at it. You can find it on Stratfor.com. We've been talking to Roger Baker. He's the Vice President for Strategic Intelligence. And also, we were talking to Fred Burton earlier. He's the Vice President for Intelligence at Stratfor. Roger, thank you so much for coming on Fed Access.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch, Friday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFPD, your source for federal news now.